Gang, are you looking for better sleep and relaxation or relief from pain or anxiety without feeling totally drugged? Well, let me tell you about True Hemp Science Full Spectrum CBD products. True Hemp Science promises premium quality, pure ingredients, and true value. They source the highest grade organic hemp from around the world to handcraft the finest full spectrum CBD products in the Austin area and beyond. They offer a complete line of full-spectrum CBD products, including oils, tinctures, skincare lotions, sports rubs, gummies, and chocolates. Gang, I've been using their products for a while now, and they've lowered my anxiety and given me incredibly restful sleep. How Did I Get Here has teamed up with True Hemp Science to bring you a very special offer that benefits all of us. Spend $100 or more at True Hemp Science, and they will include either the number 81 distillate, which is great for nighttime, or the number 23 distillate, which is great for daytime, with your order. And that is a $25 value. Just go to truehempscience.com/HDIGH. That's truehempscience.com/HDIGH. And balance your body and mind with True Hemp Science Full Spectrum CBD products. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself,
how did I get here? And now here is your host, Johnny Howdy.
When we talked.
All right. Hello. I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys all had a good weekend, whatever it is you did this weekend. This show is dropping on Monday because there are three shows coming out this week. And I am actually doing this intro last Wednesday in the past. Yeah, I'm doing this intro last Wednesday in the past because very early last Thursday, I flew to Miami to visit family. My brother had a kid, a baby, and I'm going to visit family. I haven't been there in a couple years since before COVID, and COVID was like my excuse for a while, but now you got to go. Your brother has a kid. Your family's all there. Everyone's at war with each other, so I guess you'll hear all about it on Wednesday's show. I'll let you know how it went. It's going to be insane. Go back and listen to the last couple of intros of the shows. You can find out what I'm dealing with, what I'm contending with, what's going on with my trip to Miami. Gang, I have an amazing show for you guys today. Jim Babchak, guitar player and co-founder of the band The Smithereens, one of my favorite bands since the mid-80s, since I was in high school and I lived in Miami and I had a band and I heard the song Behind the Wall of Sleep, and me and my friend Richard Weiss, who ended up being Mr. Rocket Baby with me many, many years later, we learned how to play that song. We played it with our band in the garage. It was a great time. His garage. That's where we played. Also, Love and Blood and Roses from back then, man, driving around. I think that's from the Especially For You record that came out in 1986. Anyway, the Smithereens have dropped a new album. Yes, they just dropped last Friday. It's not new. It was recorded back in 1993 when they were in between record contracts with Capitol and RCA and trying to figure out what they do. They went in and recorded a record, and it never came out back then. And it's not seen the light of day until last Friday. It's called The Lost Album on Sunset Boulevard Records. Find it at officialsmithereens.com or wherever it is that you stream and download your jams. Jim and I have a fantastic conversation about what's been going on with the Smithereens, what's been going on with him as a person, what's been going on with them since they lost their lead singer, their front man, Pat DiNuzio. What a fantastic singer. What a fantastic dude. What do? Well, they're back out on the road and they're playing, and they don't have anyone that can replace Pat DiNuzio. But they do have people that can fill in for him. And they have the great Marshall Crenshaw filling in sometimes. And other times they've got Robin Wilson from the Jim Blossoms filling in. So go to officialsmithereens.com. See when they're coming to a town near you, because I'm pretty sure they're out there supporting this record. This record's fantastic, man. It's kick-ass, you know. It doesn't have any kind of sheen on it. It's like, it comes out. You'll hear the first song on the record called Out of This World. And it comes out just rocking, raw, powerful. Boom, the Smithereens. You know it's them when they're playing. And that's one of the things, is that band has an incredibly unique voice. Incredibly unique voice. Anyway, Jim and I have a fantastic conversation about how they formed, how they found their sound, their obsession with the Beatles, all kinds of stuff. All kinds of stuff. It was really, really great getting to talk to him. You can also, he's got some coffee. It's called Babjax Coffee. B-A-B-J-A-X Coffee. smithereens.com. Find it. I hope it's good. 17 records. That's what the Smithereens put out. They're out there touring. They're doing their stuff with Marshall Crenshaw and Robin Wilson. The Lost Album is the name of the record on Sunset Boulevard Records. Go to officialsmithereens.com. See if they're coming to a town near you. Find this record. Listen to it. Check out this song, Out of This World, which is going to play in just a second after I tell you that I'm so excited for you guys to hear my conversation with this amazing, amazing legend, Jim Babjack from the Smithereens. Let's get down. We did a show together. I don't know if you remember that. It was sometime in the last, like, I was trying to remember when it was. And the funny thing, Jim, is that that weekend when I was leaving for my gigs, because we had two gigs in Houston, nobody told me we were splitting sets with you. We were on one side and you guys were on the other. Do you remember that?
I don't remember. Was this a private party or a regular gig?
It was a private party. And we were a cover band and across the room from you guys.
That sounds very odd.
Doesn't it?
I remember doing a private event with the Cult at some in Texas, but it was some rich guy, lawyer, that hired both of us to play it at his private party. Was this around this Houston gig? Was this around right before Sandy hit?
You mean,
or you wouldn't know about the hurricane Sandy?
You know what? It was sometime within the last 10 years or so, because I had already started the podcast.
Okay, I wish I could remember. The only thing I remember the last time I was in Texas was I had to get home. I called my travel agent at midnight at home, and I said, you know, you got to get me home. And I actually got the last flight home that arrived in Newark before the big hurricane hit. And we were out of power for over a week.
Jesus.
And Pat ended up staying in Dallas, I think, for a week. He couldn't fly home.
Wow.
I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, no. Sorry. I was going to say the weird thing about that whole thing was I was leaving for those gigs in Houston, and I had been carrying around this portable field recorder, so that I could do podcasts wherever, whenever, just in case I needed to. And that weekend, I was like, I don't want to schlep this thing around everywhere. So I left it at home, got there, and I was like, oh, we're splitting the show with another band. And they're like, yeah, the Smithereens. And I was like, God damn it. Why did I leave that thing at home? But I ended up I smoked cigarettes then, and I ended up hanging out with Pat a lot that day.
So he was still smoking then, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, actually, he smoked till he died.
Yeah. So anyway, it's good to see you again after that long roundabout thing. And
that's okay.
Yeah. I've been a fan of you guys since, I guess, when did Behind the Wall of Sleep? That was like 1986, right? Because I was in high school still.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all getting fuzzy to me, too, now. But, yeah, 86. I better write that book because, actually, I've been taking notes for the past 20 years, so I'll have to look back at it. Yeah, it's been that long.
Yeah.
Incredible.
And you guys started in 1980. That's when you guys formed?
With the four of us, yeah. The drummer, Dennis Dykin, we were best friends since we were freshmen in high school. So that's 1971. And so we've been playing together for over 51 years. And then Mike started playing with us in 1975. So the three of us were together for about 5 years before we met Pat. So, we were looking for a lead singer. We went through a few of them ourselves, and when we met Pat, it was kind of complete. We knew that we had a band, but and Pat, you know, gained a band immediately that already had a sound, you know, and was well rehearsed.
That's what I was going to ask.
So
you guys, yeah. I mean, there's like a power pop sound that's rooted in an era. Like, to me, your band sprung from the song "Don't Bother Me" by George Harrison from the Beatles' first record. You know what I mean? Like, we all come from a different song. And to me, like, the Smithereens have always had that dark, because there's something dark about that record, especially in the context of that first Beatles record. And there's always been something a little minor and dark about you guys.
Yeah, yeah. And George kind of had that kind of vibe, you know? Don't bother. It sounds like George.
Yeah.
And it's minor key, I think. It's an A minor, I think.
It's also,
I love that song.
Me too. I think about that song a lot, because really in the context of that record, that's the coolest fucking song on it. You know?
Did you ever hear our version of it?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
That's one of the few that I got to sing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that Pat and Dennis, this is some weird recollection I have, were hosting some kind of thing on like VH1 Classics one time that I watched. Like, I just laid on the couch and watched like 3 hours of those dudes on what I think was 3 hours on VH1 Classics. Is that right? Were you guys on there at VH1 or something?
We did, but I don't think it was 3 hours long.
I might have been super high though. So
there you go.
It might have been 3 hours to me, but I remember it. You guys are releasing the Lost album. And so this record came at a time, like you did it in 93 in between record deals.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've always been survivors and fighters all our life. 'Cause, you know, we grew up in a blue collar town and, you know, you work hard and you know, anyway, we lost our record deal with Capitol, and then, we just decided to say, fuck it. Let's go in and start recording. 'Cause we had a lot of material, geared up. And, I was actually pissed off. I was talking to Butch Vig on the phone. I sent him a bunch of my demos and we were talking about how we're going to do this and that. He had some ideas for my songs. And, all of a sudden the term wasn't around then, but he was ghosting me. He wasn't answering my calls. And I thought, oh, something's wrong, man. Something's wrong. And then Pat called and he said, Capitol just dropped us.
Oh.
They want newer, younger, grungier bands and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, fuck. You know, and I was just, I was having a house, the house that I'm in right now was being built. And I'm like, what the hell am I going to do now? You know? And I have two young kids. I ended up having three kids, but, you know, we had to survive. So we went into the studio and we started recording, every day for like 2 months. We financed it ourselves and we thought we would put out a record or license it to a label, whoever would want it at the time. 'Cause that's what we did with our first two independent records. We were just going to go independent is what we were going to do. And then we got signed to RCA. So what we did was, out of two albums worth of material, half of them we re-recorded, the ones that made sense to be an album, and that ended up being A Date with the Smithereens. And then the other half we never re-recorded, and it was just laying dormant on a DAT cassette tape. I don't know if you remember the DAT cassettes.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had it remastered and, here we are, you know, we just kind of forgot about it really, because, you know, you move on with other albums and other projects and touring and life in general. I mean, I have about two albums worth of solo stuff that's already actually mastered and completed, and I have yet to release it. And, some of that stuff is like 30 years old also. So, life just got in the way. You know, I did end up getting a day job for about 19 years, not about, it was exactly 19 years, just to, be able to survive and, you know, do the gigs, record albums and have a steady income, but I'm not doing that anymore. So I have a lot more time to look back at our archives and also write new material, because I'm working with Robin Wilson from the Gin Blossoms and Marshall Crenshaw.
Yeah.
And coming up with some brand new songs, and hopefully by next year we can have a brand new album.
Can I tell you, there's a song.
I went really on. I forgot the question was, but I really went off on a tangent there, didn't I?
That's fine, man. That's fine. I love hearing these stories, and I'll find stuff to follow up on. But it's funny that you're working with Marshall Crenshaw. There's this song, "A World Apart," on the record.
Yeah,
sounds like a Marshall Crenshaw song, honestly. Doesn't it?
That's weird. It kind of does. I always thought "Crazy Mixed Up Kid" was kind of a Marshall Crenshaw type song. But, you know, we've known him since 1980, 81, somewhere around there. You know, I remember opening up for him when he was starting out.
Yeah.
With his first album. And he actually plays keyboards on "Strangers When We Meet." On our first album.
Okay.
But he plays baritone guitar on White Castle Blues. So, you know, he was a friend of ours. He was credited as Jerome on the records because he was with Warner Brothers at the time, and I guess he couldn't use his real name.
Right,
but
right.
And kind of typical of him. Like George Harrison on somebody's album once, his name was D'Angelo or something like that. But anyway, I digress again. So, you know, longtime friends with Marshall.
Sure. Okay, so let's talk about some of these songs on the album. And just, there's a couple things I wanted to ask you. There's a song, the song after "World Apart," "Stop Bringing Me Down." There's like a heaviness to that, to that riff, and like the thing. Was that kind of like in response to sort of like what was happening at that time? Because this was like that era of like all of a sudden people were tuning their E string down to D, and like Soundgarden, and, you know, a tougher.
No,
sort
not
of
at
sound.
All.
Okay.
Yeah, no, we always tuned down a half step right from the beginning. And
was that so that it sounded darker?
Yeah, for Pat's vocal range and darker. We always thought that Hendrix tuned down on the first album, but in his case, I don't think he had a tuner or a piano around, and he just tuned his guitar to whatever he was in. So it's kind of in between a half step down and regular tuning. But because I remember as a kid trying to figure it out. But no, we always had we always were heavier live. And grungier, well, if that's the term. But no, I mean, Pat was into Black Sabbath also. And, you know, and we had all kinds of influences, but we never followed any current trends, that's for sure.
So even like you were saying that you had a day job for like 19 years, did you ever want to sort of go sideman yourself out, whore yourself out, if you will?
No. I just wanted to provide for my family. That was my main goal,
right?
I think. I was just focused on that. And, you know, Pat put out a solo record sometime in the 90s, and then I had all this other material, and I'm like, well, damn, I'm just going to record it. And, you know, I didn't intend on having a solo album. It's just, I had to find somewhere to put it. And now, you know, I have all this material. I will release it as soon as I get my act together. But, you know, I want to write new songs. I just want to keep everything current.
How is that for you? Like, what are you like writing? Are you like a regular everyday writer, or are you like a when it hits you kind of writer, or does it hit you when you're working every day? That's usually how it works out.
Whenever I pick up a guitar, I call it like a curse, but it's not really a curse. I kid about that. Every time I pick up a guitar, I come up with a riff or a song idea. So, whether or not it becomes a song is another thing, but it's like every time I pick up a guitar, I'm like, wow, this sounds cool. I don't know. It's just this thing that I have, you know, and even with a lot of the Smithereen songs, I came up with the opening riffs and of course the solos, you know, and all incidental parts. I'm always working on stuff. And now that I have an iPhone, which is great because I could put my ideas down. Years ago, I just had to remember it. And my theory back then was, if I don't remember it, it probably wasn't worth it. But if I do remember it, I'll continue working on it, and let's see if it becomes a song.
Yeah. I know there's a couple rappers that think like that. And I know that Jay-Z, the famous rapper, doesn't write stuff down. He remembers it. But he also says that's the dumbest way to do anything because he forgets half of the shit he comes up with.
Well, yeah, absolutely. It is dumb.
Yeah.
But I figure the well's not dry yet. I'll just think of something else, you know?
Yeah. When you guys, after Pat passed, and I'm sorry about that. I know that, I mean, there's a thing about your band, and it's one of those things that, like, I've been in a couple of bands that could have been that band, but you can really only be in, like, U2. There's only, like, those are guys only in that band. The Stones guys are, but the U2 guys are the same guys, always. And the Smithereens were always the same guys since we saw you guys after 1980. You know what I mean?
Pretty much.
Yeah. And to move on, and especially, like, with, you know, there's a lot of sort of, like, weight put on a front man of a band or a front person of a band, and to sort of, like, bring these other people in can be challenging and whatever. Can you talk about what it is that made y'all work with three different, like, does Susan do singing sometimes? And explain how that works.
Yeah, well, she's probably, I don't know, she's listed right now, but I just texted her the other day, and she's been busy with her tour, and I am going to get together with her, and I did give her a song. I sent her a song demo that we're going to work on together. She hasn't really done any shows with us yet.
Okay.
On her own.
All right. But
that's in the future. But yeah, this, Marshall and Robin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How does that work? Why two guys, and does that work schedule wise? And I saw there's a couple of shows on your calendar where both of them are on it.
Yeah, it's a matter of availability because
okay.
They both have their own careers. And then the people always ask or yell out in the audience, hey, someday, some way, or a Jim Blossom song. And they're like, we don't say anything, but no, we won't do that. When they're in the band with us, they are part of the Smithereens. And if you want to see them do their songs, you got to go see them. And that's fair enough. You know, they want to be part of the band. They want to be part, one of the boys, you know, and, even Marshall has said, well, I want to take a break from being Marshall. I just want to be,
Smithereen,
one of you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's a healthy way to look at it. And they both bring their own voice into it. I, you know, after Pat died, people were emailing me and saying, I'll send you my demo. I sound just like Pat, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that's not going to work for us. I think that's really creepy for us. We're not like Journey or one of those bands where you need to sound like a jukebox or something. We've always, you know, played from our hearts. And, you know, the thing is, people still want to hear the songs, and we're still young enough that it's our passion to play. This is what we do. So we're not going to stop playing. And plus we're invested so much in the songs, you know, we all created these things together, and it's just such a joy for me to play. It's my therapy. I mean, my wife passed away 6 years ago from cancer.
I'm sorry
and,
about that.
I thank you. And I, you know, so there's been a lot of, tragic life events, and what keeps me going really is the music and playing in front of people and writing new songs. It's as plain as that we truly have the passion for it.
Is it daunting at all now writing new songs? Because as a songwriter myself, I'm 53 now. There are times where there's all kinds of stuff. Like there's former me when everybody thought I was the greatest thing that I'm going up against. Then sometimes I'm writing songs and I'm like playing like a G on an acoustic guitar. And then I'll turn on a radio station and it'll be like totally computer made music. You know what I mean? Where you're like, do you ever have those sort of doubts where you're like, or do you just kind of like, are you able to get through that and slug it out?
I think I just have horse blinders on and I just do what I do. I remember when I got my first guitar in 1969, I think it was. And I'm over there fucking around with it. I didn't know how to play. And my dad's like, what are you doing? And I said, I'm trying to write a song. And he goes, well, you don't even know how to play. You have to walk before you run. And I'm like, no, I don't. I'm going to start running. I'm going to start running right now. So I always had that attitude, even when I was like 13 years old.
Yeah. There's such a power and identity in your band, at least from the time that I started listening to you guys in 1986, that you know who this band is when the song starts. Like, you know it. Like, you know it's The Who. You know it's, you know what I mean? You know it's Led Zeppelin. You know it's The Smithereens. And this, your record opens up with that Out of This World song that's just really like the rawest sounding Smithereens I've heard. That just full on, just very, very, very identifiable. Like, this is who you're listening to. Like, you have such a voice. You guys have such a voice as a band, and you have as a songwriter and stuff.
Well, that's good. That's yeah. Good. I remember when the Lemonheads first came out and people were asking me, did Pat go solo or something? Because I heard a song on the radio that sounds like you guys. What was their hit? Do you remember the Lemonheads?
Well, they did. Yeah, of course. They had that Mrs. Robinson song, but that guy definitely listened to you guys. Like, Evan Dando.
Yeah. I think, I can't remember the song.
I can't either.
I did listen to it, and it sounded a bit like that.
Well, it's funny because that guy Evan is around my age, and I remember like there were bands in the scenes that I was in where you would be like, oh, this is this kind of band. They're kind of a Zeppelin-y band. And then there was those bands where they're like, oh, they're kind of like a Smithereens band. You know what I mean? Like, you guys had a very heavy influence.
Oh, I just thought of this song. Okay. It's I know a place where I can go into your arms again. Think it might be called. It does sound like Pat. But yeah, so, you know, our influences, you know, look, during the 70s, I really didn't like disco. I'm not one of those disco haters or anything, you know, but it wasn't my favorite music. So around that time, and I didn't care for bands like Boston and Styx and all that, Journey. It wasn't my thing. So I went back to the 50s and started listening to Chuck Berry, Buddy Holly, Elvis, and I started learning how to play that stuff. And you know, the early Who, the early Kinks, the Beatles, and that was my thing, you know. I loved the Who. I loved the way Townsend played solos. They were melodic, simple, and that's how I work on my solos. I try to make them melodic. I don't need to play a million notes in there, because to me, you know, I listen to something like that, or like you watch a bar band jamming or whatever, and it's like, you know, it doesn't impress me and it doesn't really fit the song, you know. I like a good solo where you can go away humming it or remembering it
as
a crucial part, a crucial part of the song, you know. Like, can you imagine, I've seen people cover our songs too, and they have these crazy solos in there. But can you imagine A Hard Day's Night without that melodic solo in there and just somebody like Eddie Van Halen playing in there?
Oh, yeah. Down, 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 Down. Yeah, you can sing it.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that, that's a piano and guitar too, right? On that Hard Day's Night?
Yeah.
Genius.
Yeah. And George couldn't play that, so they had to slow the tape down and then they sped it up.
Was that, yeah, that Jeff Emmerich book was like kind of hard on George.
Do you think, or the vice versa?
I don't know. I'm sure we all come from that sort of world of like they're the guys on Mount Rushmore in our minds. You know what I mean? Or at least they are mine.
Yeah.
And I assume you guys doing a whole record in tribute to them, they must be the guys in yours too. That they really don't do any wrong in my book. Like you hear nasty stories every once in a while. You're like, ah, well, you know, they're just people.
Yeah, well, everybody's got that side, you know, even John, they, you know, I know peace and love and everything. And but, you know, everybody's got their dark side, too.
Yeah.
Watching the Get Back thing, especially the rooftop concert, which I went to an IMAX theater to watch, I was tearing up at the end of that. You know, it was so wonderful to see them connect like that and pull it off after such a short time. Come up with those songs and play them live. It was just, it just sounded great. And
yeah.
Even though some people might think it's throwaway material, God, I wish I had throwaway material like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Did you, cause there's, as a musician, there's like the old Let It Be, we never really saw this much of their decision-making process. But when you see that,
right.
How they're making decisions like, oh, we want to go do this, film this in like, Morocco or some kind of crazy place, like out of the blue, we're going to do this concert. And they're like, oh, you know, Ringo doesn't really like the food there. And so we can't go there. And so they like watching them make decisions and like, sort of like, you're like, oh, that's what was going on with those guys. Like nobody was in charge of anything. It was just a bunch of dudes sitting around saying shit and trying to get it done.
Yeah. I mean, look, their manager died. And when they were doing Let It Be, they were only like 27 years old. I remember what I was like when I was 27.
Yeah.
You know, I was shit. I was going through my Keith Moon period and you know, thinking I could drink everything and eat everything and, you know, be silly. And, you know, I did do stupid things like, you know, peeing into a satellite dish and at a hotel once on the roof, you know. Stuff like that, you know. I went through that period too, so very immature.
Yeah, yeah.
But now I'm mature.
Yeah,
as you can see. This is going to be audio, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, because the reason I'm sitting in my library is so I look smart.
Oh yeah,
got all these books back here.
That's good. So you didn't read them? They're just for decoration.
No, I don't read them. They're just there.
There's a couple things I wanted to ask you about that just, I'm really interested in like music scenes and I'm by no means a Twisted Sister fan, but one of my favorite documentaries is that one about them. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen that. And I've seen a lot lately, you know, but go ahead.
Yeah. So anyway, so they were based out of Long Island, but there was a whole circuit and a scene that people played up there that now they were on a metal tip, but I was wondering what the scene was like in Jersey for you guys. Like when you were coming up before you had a record deal, before your stuff was on MTV and stuff, like how did you guys tour regionally or what did you do?
Well, we did venture out to Boston and Ohio on occasion, because we had some friends there in other bands, and when they would come to New Jersey, they would open for us and we'd open for them in their state. But for the most part, I owned a record store in 1980 till about 1988. And then actually in 83, I also added video cassettes. So it was a video rental store, but sold vinyl. So one of my customers was the owner of a bar called the Court Tavern, and he just started having bands. So I got in with him, and, you know, he championed the band. His name was Bobby Albert, and it was a Court Tavern, and he passed away recently. And they were champions of the band. So we'd play there every month, and he'd give us weekend slots. So we, you know, we packed it in. We would play three sets a night. We played a lot of covers because we didn't have many originals at the time. And then we also played in New York at in the village, Greenwich Village, called Kenny's Castaways, which is no longer there, too. And the owner there, Pat Kenny, also championed us. He loved us. So we would play there every month a few times. And there was a club called the Dirt Club that also liked us. And so those were the three main clubs. I call them the cavern clubs because that's where we really, you know, just played all the time and, you know, honed our craft, I guess, is right. what I would say.
Now, were those gigs
so they
oh, sorry,
they
go gigs, ahead. Sorry. I hate Zoom.
As far as the scene goes, yeah, there were a lot of bands. A lot of them were considered new wave bands, and I don't even know what the hell that means. Does that mean they had a synthesizer? And then they had there was the metal scene was more in Long Island, and then rockabilly was big too. So you had all these different bands and punk. Oh shit, there was a lot of punk bands too. So we were kind of in between all of that because we played, you know. We played a little Elvis, you know, rockabilly stuff and, you know, and I guess power pop kind of stuff, Badfinger, you know, things like that. The Who, early Who stuff.
Early Who, yeah. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, not even the Tommy stuff. It was like just up to like the third album.
The Kids Are All Right. Can't explain
Kids Are All Right,
shit like
can't
that. Yeah, yeah.
Substitute. Yeah. We used to play those all the time. But yeah, there was a scene in New Brunswick. And it was a pretty cool scene. You know, you'd pack in the clubs, but then you couldn't go any further than that, you know, unless you had something on the radio. And we knew that. We knew that we wouldn't get anywhere unless we were played on the radio or had a record out. So, you know, we did get a chance to go to Scandinavia in 1983. There was a label that reissued our Beauty and Sadness EP, and the guy brought us over there for a month, and then we played in Norway, Sweden, and Finland.
How did that go?
And stayed in his apartment. It was great, except that didn't really help our career either. And I remember we got a 3.5-star role review in Rolling Stone from Kurt Loder, and we thought, hey, okay, maybe now we'll get signed to a major label, and nothing happened. Nothing happened for another 2 years. So, but we kept trying, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting because in the history of these bands, and like I come from that, I mean, I've ventured off in different ways, but essentially I'm a Beatles-based rock and roll power pop guy, right? And that's kind of like my thing. And to me, there's been like a history of these stories of these amazing bands, and their focus is having amazing songs. Like that's the main focus, is having great songs that you can sing along to. But in some weird way, all of these great bands like Cheap Trick, like you guys, like Matthew Sweet, there's like times when they'll shine the light on you, but it's not like the recognition doesn't match the level of fucking artistry and creativity to me. It drives me nuts, like Big Star or Badfinger, you know?
What do you mean?
I mean like in the mainstream, like all of those bands, including yourselves, you had your moment, like before you went in to make this record, the Lost album that you're just releasing now, you guys were in between deals. But at one point, a few years before, Kurt Loder was giving you 3.5 stars. I'm sure that I know, I just remember that people were very excited about how great your band was. And that's what it was about. It was about the greatness of the music and the songs, like all of the other great power pop bands. But every one of those bands has their time where the mainstream kind of shines the light on them. But then for some reason, it doesn't stay on them like it does on other artists. That I've never quite understood that.
Right. I guess I don't know the I don't know. I mean, Cheap Trick put out a good record a couple of years ago.
They always do.
I have it on vinyl.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even Nick Lowe. And there was an article about how the older bands are putting out great material, but nobody's hearing it. Radio is not going to play it. I mean, maybe now with Little Steven's Underground Garage, at least there you could hear.
Right.
New music that we would like, you know. So there is an outlet there. Otherwise, it's just up to your own Facebook page or whatever to promote this.
Well, and also smaller avenues. While this is not Rolling Stone or Little Steven's Garage, it's still probably, like, you know, there's going to be some people that go like, "Holy shit, the Smithereens have a new album out? What?" You know what I mean? Maybe go listen to it and listen to the record.
Well, that's what happened with when Pat suggested we re-record the Meet the Beatles album.
Right.
I was like, "You're nuts." So, you know, I had to learn. And I, you know, I had a day job and everything. But I the night before we went into the studio, I just stayed up till 4 a.m. and played along with the record and figured out how to play it. So, because I didn't know everything on there. It's complicated stuff, some of it.
Yeah.
So the album got a review in the New York Times, and it was the center of the arts and leisure section, like the centerfold. It was like a 2-page big deal. And a lot of people thought that we had broken up and well, what happened to the Smithereens? And the thing is, we were always around, we were always playing, and we were always doing stuff. But that New York Times article kind of brought us back to the, I get not mainstream, but at least to our fans.
Yeah.
That, hey, they're still around. Because we were doing less gigs and they're not promoted the same. And, you know, people think that you're gone unless there's something out there.
Right. Right.
But anyway, that album brought us back into the public eye, I suppose.
Yeah, it's such an odd business, and I'm always in awe and so grateful that some of my favorite people are still out there doing it. It's nice to know that you're still challenging yourself as an artist to come up with new music and not just resting on your laurels and getting to work with these great singers too. You know. And still, you know, your voice as a writer still comes through so strongly. That's great.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful. And I saw Nick Lowe with that band, with the Mexican Masks. I'm getting brain dead here. I can't think of the name of the band, but, it was wonderful. You know, it's great, you know. Great. I'm sad that Dave Edmunds isn't playing anymore, because I'd love to see him again. But he never really had a big following here in the United States. He would play New York and L.A. and Chicago, but that's about it. I actually saw him in Phoenix on the DE7th tour. I just happened to be there, and I also saw him in New York at Irving Plaza, which was sold out. But in Phoenix, he played this bar, and there was like 10 people there. It was just, but he put on a great show, and I was glad I got to see it. But that's just an example, you know, of people that just, like, you know, I just can't do it. I you know, there's no audience here for me.
So
but anyway, I digress.
You guys are hitting out and playing some shows, and do you have any plans to come to Texas?
Yeah, you know, the problem really is the money.
Yeah.
You know, the offers, they're low, and we just can't go. I mean, we would lose money because just to pay for flights and hotels and rental vehicles. If they don't pay us enough, we can't go. It's not like we're 20 years old and we can hop into a van and drive across the country.
Right.
You know, we're a corporation and we have liability insurance and accountants and all that. And, it's not cost effective. I would love to go back because I love Austin and we've had great shows in Dallas. I remember a place called the Glass Cactus we used to play.
Oh, yeah.
And they used to sell out.
We used to play there,
but,
too.
You know, I don't know if there's any venues that could afford to pay us enough.
Right, right.
And it's not like we're looking to make a lot of money. We just don't want to lose money.
Right.
So that's basically it with everywhere in the United States, apart from the major cities.
Yeah. I had only like 2 gigs this month, which is real weird for me because I live off my gigs mostly. You know what I mean?
You live off what?
I live off my gigs mostly, and to have only 2 in a month is pretty freaky. Like, you know, I think we're all kind of experiencing that right now. So let me ask you this: so you are playing regionally. Yeah, you still live in New Jersey, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but we keep that to a minimum, too. It's not like we're like a local band playing around here. We only play in New Jersey maybe once or twice a year, just like any other market, because you don't want to burn out your audience, you know, either.
Right.
You know, by playing in little bars or whatnot, you know, that's not going to happen.
Right. But I see that. I mean, you are playing some shows. People can go find you guys at officialsmithereens.com. There are some show dates. You're also doing a cruise and stuff, like an 80s cruise next year. Is that so?
Yeah, that's funny because I didn't feel like we belonged in the 80s during the 80s. So it's kind of weird.
You know.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, go ahead.
No. I was gonna say just something about that was that was one of those things about you guys and REM and some other bands. Like, those were formative years for me where I was sort of finding my voice as who I was as a musician, you know, just a kid, that there were bands like you guys and like REM and stuff that colored outside the lines of what was happening. Like, you didn't sound like, you know, whatever drivel was happening coming out of Los Angeles or something. You guys were like just real honest to God artists, and you were doing stuff in a way that I could, like, my band covered Behind the Wall of Sleep, like whenever that song got, and I was in high school, like that immediately was thrown into our repertoire, just like a Tom Petty song or like an REM song, because you could fucking play it. There was no like weird synthesizer and drum machine shit happening. It was like 4 dudes just bashing it out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's what it still is.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, man. I feel like, I have a real, for myself, I don't mind that people play to tracks and do stuff like that. Now, I totally understand because of the affordability, like you were just talking about. It's very difficult to take your thing out and a bunch of people to replicate it. And you got people going up on stage with like a computer and their guitar and they play the thing, as you know, along with the record, kind of. And I don't diss anyone for doing that, but that's not, if that's what I had to do, I wouldn't do this anymore. I did it to like be in the moment and, you know, on a tightrope where you can fall at any minute. You know what I mean?
That's the beauty of live shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to see something exciting and different, you know, or just human, you know. I don't need to see a band play everything note for note perfect.
Yeah.
I could just listen to the record for that. So, yeah, you know, it's organic, you know. As a matter of fact, one of the things we started doing in the recent 10 years or whatever is we don't use a drum riser. And I discovered this. I said, I want Dennis to be on the floor with us. And he agrees too, because I want to feel that drum set coming through the stage. into my body, you know, and I play off that. Since we've been playing together for 51 years, I mean, that's, I'm listening to the band and I'm listening to him as I'm playing. You know, I'm enjoying it just as much as the audience is at the same time. I mean, a lot of times I close my eyes when I'm playing and I'm listening to the band and people are saying, I can't take a good picture of you because your eyes are always closed.
Yeah, well, that's that's indicative of the times that we live in now. That statement. Yeah. Well, I'm thrilled to be talking to you. You and your bandmates and your writing have had such an effect on me as an artist, and just I'm so excited to know that you're still doing it, because I have this belief that if we let ourselves and we stay curious enough, we will get better always. And I feel like you're one of those artists, and I talk to people all the time that are a little bit older than me that are still connected. You know what I mean? Still interested in challenging themselves.
Yeah. Well, I always want to learn. I always want to be better. I want to be a better person, you know? It's just, that's life, you know. I don't want to sit around watching TV eating cheese doodles, you know. I thought occurred to me about Susan Cal. Do you know that song? You're a power pop guy, right? Yeah. So do you know that song of mine called Now and Then? It's on the Blow Up record. It's called Now and Then.
I don't recall it right off the top of my head, no. If I heard it, maybe I'd know.
You should listen to it. I got the Cowsills. All right, I asked them to sing background vocals on it, and it's just beautiful, you know. So I'm working on another song where I'm going to bring them back to sing the harmonies on it, because I want that joy again, I had recording that particular song.
Yeah.
So let me know what you think of it.
Yeah, I will check it out.
Listen.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to ask you is, I wanted to ask you about Bab Jack's coffee. I'm a huge coffee drinker, and I'm actually pretty in awe of anyone who has their own coffee roast. What is that?
All right. Okay. A couple of things happened. About 5-6 years ago, I thought, hey, maybe I'll open up a record store again and sell vinyl, but this time I'm going to open up a coffee shop, have my own coffee, and sell vinyl. And I thought, what a great idea, you know? But then I'm thinking, all right, it's not really realistic. It would take a couple of $100,000, and I can't be there every day, obviously. And it sounds like a great idea. I would love to do that, but there's a couple of problems with that. Being one of them is, you know, you don't know who your clientele is going to be, and I, you know, the world is a different place now, and so I have a friend who's a roaster. He's a coffee roaster. And I jokingly asked him one day if he can make me a coffee infused with bourbon. And and we laughed about it, but he tried a couple of different things. And he brought me one that had a rum-based flavor. And I'm like, hey, this is really good. I've never had anything like this. Why don't I, you know, bag this up and sell it? And this was 5 years ago. So I incorporated, I did all the paperwork and everything and got the domain name and all that. But it took me 5 years to get it together to sell it online. And I figure I'm just going to sell it online because maybe someday I might do the vinyl and the coffee shop. I don't know. But right now it's just going to be online, and I'm just starting with three. Although I had the breakfast, the light roast, and then the dark roast. And a lot of people, I didn't realize this. I learned this. I thought the dark roast was stronger, had more caffeine, but the light roast actually has more caffeine. So, and then I'm going to come out with a decaf, and it's going to be called What's the Point? But that's, you know, that's my sense of humor and everything. Because, hey, look, I had high blood pressure. You know, I'm on pills now, but I had to drink decaf for a while. So there was a point there. And then, of course, you want good flavor.
Yeah.
And sometimes you want a cup of coffee at night. So anyway, that, and I'm going to do whole bean. I got this Italian roast, but it's got to be whole bean because I like making espresso. I have an espresso machine and, I like to have a good cup of espresso.
Me too.
So there's going to be that, and you know, slowly progress. It's not anything for me to make $1 million or, well, not even $1,000, but it's all small batch stuff, and I'm already out of, I think, all of it. And it's going to take about 2 weeks or more to roast some more. So I'm loving it. I drink it myself. So, you know, I figured I'd just put it out there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just another thing, you know?
Yeah.
Another passion, really. I mean, I love coffee, so why not?
Yeah. You know, and so you ship it. That's how people, they order it online. And somebody ships it.
Yeah, start shipping. I have my roaster is the one that's shipping it now. But because I have to learn, I got to figure out how to store it. And plus, I don't want to store it too long because I always want it to be fresh. I don't want to, you know, sell old coffee.
Right, right.
So, I got to figure some things out. But right now it's being shipped out by my friend.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And people can find that. They can find it at officialsmithereens.com too, right? Because I think that's where I saw it.
Oh, good. I was hoping it would be there.
Is there an actual website for Babjacks?
Yeah, there is. And it's not spelled like my name. It's B-A-B-J-A-X instead of K, J-A-K. Because I thought it would be weird having the K and an apostrophe S, so that's why I made it into an X.
No, it's cool.
Yeah.
So is it babjackscoffee.com or what?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, I will have links from my website and from the band's website. And I have a vinyl Christmas single out too.
Oh, I saw that.
It's another thing where I wrote and recorded that song in 1995. Now think about how long ago that was. And I just got around to putting it out now. So I hope you like it, you know.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't write down the name of it in all of my notes. I somehow missed. Look at this crazy. Looks like a...
That's good. I finally started a YouTube channel, so it's on there. It's called It's Love on Christmas Day and Christmas Eve Without Your Love. And it's pretty cool. I love vinyl, so I'm going to try to put out more of it in the future.
Yeah. Well, man, it seems like you're still doing fun and creative things that are keeping you, you know, alive and like, you know, looking forward.
Look, like I said, you know, my wife passing away, I'm going to be 65 in 2 months. So now I'm looking at Medicare options and all that crap. You still have a while to go for that. But so I'm walking 3 miles a day, and I'm eating oatmeal during the week every day, and I'm eating vegetables and fruit. So I'm trying real hard to stay healthy because, you know, there's a lot I still want to do. That's it. You know, I have passions for things and I want to keep it going as long as I can.
Okay. Well, that's good, man. It's been really nice talking to you.
I wish I had more hair.
Yeah. Yeah, well.
I can't, but Mick Jagger is like 80-something, and he still has a full head of hair. It just cracks me up.
Full head of hair? Were you watching him during, like, when he was getting ready for that tour last year, like on Instagram? He would film his shirtless workouts?
Yeah.
And the guy's like.
Incredible.
Yeah. Incredible. Incredible.
Yeah.
That's we can all aspire to stay in young like that, you know, physically. That's the only part, because you can keep it going in your mind, but it's your body that's like, nope.
right.
Yeah. Well,
okay, my man.
Dude, this has been really great talking to you. The Lost Album. I'm going to put this out the Tuesday after the album drops, so people can go find the Lost Album. Go to officialsmithereens.com. If you want to check out Bab Jack's Coffee, I'm going to drop you an email, because I'd like to see if you'd like to do some like promotion or something with the podcast with the coffee. I think that's something that might be able to work.
Yeah, so, we'll see, you know?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I'll reach out to you. But Jim, it has been really great talking to you and meeting you Zoom-wise. And
again,
this record, The Lost Album, is absolutely fantastic. It's what you want. It's a Smithereens record you haven't heard. So, yeah.
It's a time capsule, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for doing the show, and I'll reach out to you and send your guys the stuff when this drops and everything, but it's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Same here. Thanks.
Yeah, man.
Thanks.
Take care.
All right. Take care.
Bye, bud.
Bye.
Gang, that's Jim Babjack from the Smithereens. Find them at officialsmithereens.com. Officialsmithereens.com. Check out their album, The Lost Album, out now. Just came out on Friday. That song, Out of This World, is really good, right? I told you, man, it's raw. It's powerful. It's rockin'. It's the Smithereens. And you know it's them. That's what I love about it. So, so distinctive. So distinctive. Go see them while they're on tour now with the great Marshall Crenshaw or Robin Wilson from the Jim Blossom singing. OfficialSmithereens.com. I want to thank Jim Babjack for coming on the show. It was really great talking to him, man. Really, really great. All right, gang. Don't forget that you can listen to this show wherever they stream the podcast, be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher, anywhere. New shows every Tuesday and every Friday, or like this week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Three shows this week, gang. I've got some really exciting shows. Tune in. Wednesday's going to be a special show. All right? Have a great week, whatever it is you're doing. Tune in Wednesday. Hear how my trip to Miami went. Jesus. And enjoy this song by the Smithereens, Out of This World, from their album, The Lost Album. Check it out. Let's get down.
One addiction, a riddle. Another with a knife in his back. They got my sympathies in the morning. I say a prayer for them in the night. I know just how you strike without warning. And how I gave up without a fight. I never understand the new things you found. You're a complicated kind of a girl. You say the pain of living's really getting you down, but I can't feel sorry for a girl who's out of this world.
Let's get out of this world.
Out of this world.